The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The war in Israel goes on. Many people have become hardened or immune or so overwhelmed that they've decided to tune out from the images and stories on the news. Zach Hania is an Irish-Palestinian man who spent months trapped in the Gaza Strip. He finally emerged and he spoke to Kieran Cuddy on The Hard Shoulder yesterday afternoon, and his description of life in Gaza is truly shocking. I was so taken by what he was describing that I had to pull the car over to stop and listen to what he said. Now, this is not for tender ears.
It's hell on earth. It's a struggle just to stay alive. If you are not dying from the bombs or the missiles, you are afraid to die by hunger or by not having enough water to drink. You hear the bombs, you hear the drones, the fighter jets, day and night. You wake up at night hearing artillery shells, hearing missiles attacking houses. The bed where I was sleeping was shaking because of the sounds of the bombs. Windows are all broken. Glass of the windows flies everywhere. The houses shakes when the bombs or the missiles of the F-16 is near the area. You can feel it's like an earthquake. It's unbelievable experience, unimaginable, unexplainable. It's beyond imagination. It's beyond the humanity. What really annoys me is the world is allowing this to continue to happen for the last 7 or 8 months. And we are watching, everybody is watching this live. And that's really what kills us more than the Israeli bombs. Is how we are not able to understand how the world, is this acceptable? I saw what I saw yesterday. People in tents are burned. It's a mini Holocaust. When you attack people in their tents and you already ask them to go to those areas and you come and attack them, the intention is very clear. You want to kill them. And I saw people like, you know, burned. I saw kids without their heads. A child without his head. I saw it on the internet. That was in last night. Like, you know, it's really sarcastic. When the U.S. government is sending weapons and missiles to Israel and artillery shells to Israel, ammunitions, and they are sending, on the other hand, some food for us. We don't need your food. Stop sending weapons to Israel to kill us. We don't need your food. Please stop sending Israel weapons to kill our kids, our children, our women, to burn us alive. That's what we want. And those government who has the power, they can stop this. There is no Gaza. Most of it is destroyed. Most buildings are destroyed. Even if the war stops today, there would be no life in Gaza.
And that's Zach Hania, and there's so much more. You can find it online. It's a podcast to hear his full description of what life is like in Gaza for people who are constantly on the move and going to places where Israel tells them to go only to be subject to this kind of attack. And the IDF said that it was a targeted operation, and that they had targeted two Hamas leaders there, and that they claimed to have forensic skill in just targeting the people they want. But obviously the death toll here was in the dozens, and many, many more injured and burned. And Netanyahu said it was a tragic accident. What gives him the right to decide which child should live or die when he himself appears to value his own life above, and his political life, never mind his physical life, above the lives of others? Anyway, I'm joined on the line by Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute at University College in Dublin. Scott, good morning.
Very good morning to you, Pat.
This is a horror piled upon horror. I mean, there's nothing new in children, women and children being bombed, but there seems to be something more outrageous about this, that people who are on the move, who only have a tent over their heads, and that in the middle of the night they should be bombed by Israel.
Well, Pat, I hate to sound cynical, but what made this different is just that there were a lot of witness accounts that could be quickly highlighted from the scene as these bodies burned, because there's nothing new specifically in Israel carrying out a mass killing in which dozens, scores, even more than 100 or hundreds of civilians will die. So when this news broke, I was reminded that very soon after the start of the Israeli operations last October, in response to Hamas's own mass killings, the Israelis said, "Oh, we've killed a senior Hamas figure in northern Gaza near the Jabalia refugee camp." Well, in the Jabalia refugee camp, in that operation, more than 100 civilians also lost their lives, and several hundred were wounded. And what transpired is that the Israelis had used 500-pound bombs and even a 2,000-pound bomb in that operation. Now, here we are 7 months later, and Israel again says, "Oh, well, we killed a Hamas commander. That's why we carried out the operation." But it just so happens, of course, that probably using large bombs, who knows, 500-pound bombs, maybe a 2,000-pound bomb, they actually wind up killing at least 45 people. And that death toll will rise. And I will just be very honest, as I always am with you and with your listeners. I think for this war cabinet, including Prime Minister Netanyahu, to use that horrible phrase that we first heard more than 30 years ago, collateral damage, no amount of collateral damage is too great if they actually kill a Hamas leader. It does not matter how many civilians die, it does not how many are burnt, it does not matter how many are displaced. Because for the Israeli War Cabinet, if not for the rest of us, that is an acceptable cause.
Now, it's one thing to understand the cynicism that attaches to all of this, but eventually public opinion turns when the extent of atrocities is revealed in the way this particular atrocity was revealed and played on primetime television in the United States. And that is what the political leaders there are probably most conscious of.
So I think, you and I are probably discussing whether this is a game changer, because it's like, okay, will this be the mass killing, which, as people see it on their screens, as the horror, if not completely recognized, at least you feel something is badly amiss here, that it puts pressure on the Biden administration to finally draw a red line with Israel. And I have to say to you, with great regret, in the short term, no, this is not a game changer. The White House, of course, did not suspend military aid after previous mass killings, including the one in Jabalia I talked to you about. They have not suspended military aid after the killing of hundreds of aid workers, even if they briefly warned Israel, "You need to allow some aid into Gaza, where these people are starving and desperate." The signals from the White House this morning is, "Oh, well, we're very concerned about this. Even if you kill a military target, you really shouldn't kill civilians." The Israeli press is already saying that this is a mild U.S. statement. So no, I think the Americans will continue to give Israel the political space to carry on with this. They can kill people from the air as long as there's not an all-out ground assault on Rafah. Now, having said that, and I can go further with this if you want, I do think this is a game changer in the longer run, not with the Americans, but with other countries, including Ireland and other countries in Europe, because Israel is going to be increasingly isolated here.
And yet, on CNN last evening, some of the analysts were saying, Biden laid down a red line here, and they have breached that red line. They've crossed his red line. And we had Obama's red line in Syria, which, of course, was crossed, and nothing was done. So America has to be careful, I suppose, of laying down red lines that are totally ignored by the people at whom they're aimed.
Certainly, Obama betrayed the Syrian civilians, hundreds of thousands of whom were killed by the Assad regime, when he said, "Look, we're not going to tolerate any chemical attacks, let alone the conventional attacks." But the Biden administration didn't set a red line here, Pat, against bombing. When we had all the headlines about the red line a few weeks ago about Rafah, what the red line specifically was is we don't want armored columns going and just running all the way through the city. As soon as that announcement was made, there were Israeli aerial operations that killed dozens of people in Rafah. And this occurred within hours. And immediately, a Biden administration official went out there and said, we don't consider this a major military operation. So in other words, the red line here was not set against what we have seen in the last few hours. Now, whether the Biden administration shifts this and says, look, we do not want you carrying out aerial operations with these massive bombs, and whether, equally important, they say, and if you do so, we will not supply you with any more of these 500 and 2,000 pound bombs. That's what we should watch for. But I very much doubt that the Americans will go, that the administration will go that far.
So, although just watching the coverage last night on American television, I was wondering, is this a turning point? Is this going to be a straw that will finally break the Biden back on Israel and cause them to stay their delivery of more arms and perhaps more publicly criticize Netanyahu? You're saying it might, but not yet.
No, Pat. In other words, I actually don't think it will in the near future. I am going to point you to some wider context here that I think are probably going to be more important than even the Americans. I think the first wider context is, and we will see it today, with the formal recognition of the state of Palestine by Spain, who has already announced, probably by Ireland, who will be flying the Palestinian flag outside the Department of Foreign Affairs, and by Norway, that you're going to have more European states that are going to look beyond this conflict, if we ever get an end to this conflict, and say, look, we can no longer rely on the U.S. brokering an Israel-Palestine agreement for a two-state solution. We've got to simply start to carve out our own positions here. I think you look at the International Criminal Court, which only a few days ago said, look, you know, this would be effectively transgressing international humanitarian law if Israel invades Rafah. And you see what happens in the ICC. People will say this is symbolic, but it's a very powerful symbolism. And if the European Union, which is now reportedly considering sanctions, does impose sanctions on Israel, that will add to that. So there will be this shift in the international community against the Israelis. Secondly, and I think probably more immediate, several days ago, one of the three members of the war cabinet, Benny Gantz, who is the leader of the opposition, but was brought into the war cabinet for this conflict, he gave Benjamin Netanyahu a three-week ultimatum. He said, you sort this out, you get our hostages home, you get us an end game in terms of the aerial operations, the ground operations, you don't get us stuck there indefinitely. Now that clock is ticking. Will Benny Gantz follow through with that ultimatum? Because if he does, it probably means elections in Israel. And I think that will be far more significant than anything the Biden administration does in the near future. Again, if Gantz acts against Netanyahu.
If he does. Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute at University College Dublin. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.